Here we go.
Hey, everybody. This is Brett. Welcome to a supplemental installment of School Sucks Podcast. Today on the show, what you're going to hear are some items that were cut out of Thursday night's live show from 10 to 12 and the After School Sucks special from 12, went on until about 2 in the morning. And originally, this installment was going to be all of the callers from those two shows on Thursday. But after listening back to the whole thing, I found that it made a better presentation to just make it about one caller and one topic. And we actually gave him two opportunities, once during the regular show and once during the after show, to call in and talk about what is, frankly, one of my least favorite subjects, the validity of the U.S. Constitution, which to me is very much the appeal to authority. Larkin is very knowledgeable on this subject. I felt like he was very patient, trying to get through this conversation, and I certainly, from my own past experience, understand the caller's point of view as well. So if you are interested in hearing everything that you haven't seen or heard yet from the Thursday show, there are some other callers, there was some other conversation. It is available on YouTube, the School Sucks Podcast YouTube channel. It's username School Sucks Podcast. And I will put a link to the entire playlist for this unedited video show in the show notes for this podcast. And don't forget, you might have missed it, episode 161, hidden behind this show is the after show, just with the callers removed, and you will be able to hear one of those callers in this installment. So I hope you enjoy this. It might be interesting, it might be a little frustrating, but I thought it was worth including. So thank you very much for listening. Take care. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Hour 2 of School Sucks Live, the School Sucks radio show. We're ready for some phone calls if you want to make them. 843-JOIN-SSP. With me in the studio tonight is Corey.
Hello.
Hey, you enjoying this conversation so far? I think it's terrific.
I think it is terrific.
And we are going to go... Larkin, you want to take some calls?
Sure.
All right. We're going to go to Jason in Wisconsin. You are on School Sucks Live. How are you doing tonight?
Yeah, this is Jason calling back.
All right. What's on your mind?
Well, I listened to the show so far, and you guys touched on a wide variety of topics, including evolution. But it seems to me that you're basically saying that, you know, government is bad. I mean, that seems like the gist of it.
Basically.
Mm-hmm.
And then you define government in kind of a weird way, I would say. I would say that the definition of a government is whenever you have a society and you try to manage the interactions between the people of the society, that's when you arrive at a government. I mean, you can define it many different ways, but usually when you start defining it any other way, you end up talking about specific forms of government.
Well, I have no problem, and this is something that I started the show with tonight when this conversation began. Oh, my goodness, hold on. Let me bring Larkin back into the conversation. Larkin, were you able to hear all that?
No, you had me on hold the whole time.
That's too bad. Oh, man.
My answers would be a little better if I know what the question is.
All right. So, Jason, what you're driving at is that you've identified that we're saying government is bad, evil, etc., and that you feel we're not being specific enough about what government is?
No, I think that when you talk about, you know, government being bad, I mean, you can look at a form of a government, and then you can look at its actions or effects, and then you can arrive at a conclusion that that is definitely bad. But when you talk about the concept of a government, like, basically, I would define a government as the management of interactions between the people in some sort of region.
Ooh, so let's say we started calling that governance instead of government. And let's just say and Larkin, you can jump in on this as well. Let's just say we start throwing around the idea. We just begin the discussion that one day, with a little bit of work and education and thought and honesty, we could evolve to a point where what is at the center of society does not have to be men with over, if we want to go over a few thousand years, who had the biggest stones or swords or guns or bombs, or whatever justifications they came up with to rule over other people. But someday at the center of society, we could have an authority that is not person or position based, but based on principles.
I think that that's what we had at the inception of our own government. I mean, since then,
we didn't nearly
radically change.
I have a question. Can you name any government anywhere in the world at any time in history that didn't claim the right to demand money from innocent people under threat of hurting anyone who didn't pay up?
The Indian tribes.
That isn't government. They didn't call it government.
Actually,
it was organization.
Yeah, but, well, yeah, it wasn't a government in the sense that, you know, most people like to hold on to nowadays. But if you go back to the definition that I was trying to go with, where whenever you try to manage the interactions of a people in a region, you end up with a government and or governance, which is just a different tense of the word. But
oh, it's so much more
Indian
than that.
Tribe,
It's a fundamentally different thing. There's an interesting exchange that somebody, I forget the other party's name, but it was an exchange between somebody and Thomas Jefferson, who pointed to the Indian tribes and said, you know, they have organization, they have their elders, and most people listen to their elders because they know stuff, but they don't actually have government. And he asked Jefferson, do you think their life would be improved by having a government? And Jefferson said, no, leave them the way they are. Our version of government would not help them. And they didn't call that government. They said they didn't have a government. They have organization. They have people who know stuff. But government, you know, what everybody uses that term is the people with the right to rule, the people who tax us and boss us around.
Well the chief indeed had, the right to make decisions that affected the entire tribe. So
he had no enforcement power.
He did in the same mannerisms that you think that this theoretical government that was changes in schooling and stuff that we could arrive to, he didn't coerce people to do the things that he wanted them to do.
Right.
But in fact, he used his position of, honor, or however you want to describe it, to basically, when he made recommendations, they wanted to carry out his will without any coercion.
Right, so he was a leader and not a ruler.
And so in a lot of ways, the Indian tribe kind of represents, you know, your ideal form of government.
Well, I think the Indian tribes, because obviously I think it's safe to say that none of us are experts on that subject. So there might have been a variety of degrees of force used from one group of natives to the next in different places at different times. But what we're really focused on here is force. Now, one interesting thing about Native Americans is because it was a civilization that had never been, for lack of a better word, westernized, we can see a look further back in time at how the concept of leadership might have turned into government. Now, this is somewhat theoretical, but I think there's an author named Robert Higgs, with two G's, if you want to look him up, who's done some very good research and work on this subject. In the beginning, when people traveled in packs, wandering and gathering, hunting, etc., there would be times when people would have to gravitate to the leadership of the strongest, the most trustworthy. But the thing was, that was always somebody that the people in the tribe put into that position of leadership because they knew that person. That person had proven themselves. They trusted that person. What that morphed into
with respect to even the most the softest forms of government we have today, those people are complete strangers who have done nothing to earn our trust. In fact, they get into the positions where we can even choose them by constantly violating our trust. So I understand what you're saying, and I want to ask you, what do you think? All the ground we've just covered, what do you think the ideal form of government would be?
Well, when I read the Constitution, I idealize it quite a bit. I mean, there's very few force mechanisms in it. In fact, the only one that really comes to mind is, well, the only two that come to mind are the taxation provisions and the war provisions. And the rest of them are actually just like an illusion that was created back starting around 1880 with the advent of corporations. That's when statutes started coming into play, is because now that we had these new entities called corporations, of course the state needed the power to, you know, regulate them. So, you know, you ended up with these statutes, and then we ended up after that basically corporatizing every individual so that these statutes now apply to them, which is a lot of the reasons why, you know, when freemen go into the courts, they try to say, you know, I'm not this corporation, which doesn't work, because even the people that understand it, you know, proclaim that, you know, since you use this community, you owe it to the community to kind of abide by their rules. I mean, if you actually look back at even speed limits and that kind of thing, you end up with, that was originally instituted to control commerce of those large trucks, 18-wheelers.
All right, Jason, and we're going to have to put you on hold because we've got to go to a quick break, but we can hang, if you want to hang with us for another segment, we can pick it up. This is School Sucks Live. We'll be back in a couple. Hey, everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks Live. Today is September 6th. 2012, I would say. And
that sounds about right.
Yeah. Corey in the studio with me. On the phone, we have Larkin Rose, and we also have a caller named Jason. We spent the last segment talking about this language of government. And Jason had called me before the show and said that he believed he had identified a contradiction in our position. We're going to get to that. But when we went to the break, I had asked him what he felt like the ideal form of government was. We had identified the Constitution as that. And then during the break, we actually had a little bit of chatter there about did the Constitution work. So, Jason, I'll start by opening it up to you. A lot of people have a lot of reverence for the Constitution. 240 years later, looking back and evaluating how it went, I would say, did it work? And you would probably say no, but it seemed like you were putting some of the blame on the development of the corporation in America as a person.
Well, that was the mechanism that they used to basically usurp the Constitution and its original meaning. I would further say that most of the people that I talk to that have any reverence to the Constitution haven't even read it. And those that have read it, they look at the inconsistencies of their current government and what the Constitution says, and they just kind of somehow ignore those or somehow justify them. Like, you know, you have the freedom of speech, but obviously you can't go into a building and yell fire because that would cause all kinds of negative consequences. Well, in a way I kind of see the argument, but in another way I kind of see it as, well, you know, all you have to do is start that incremental process, and now you can no longer speak anywhere, which is exactly what we see on YouTube, where if you try to peacefully assemble, good luck with that, baton to your head, that kind of thing. But as far as the contradiction, I kind of want to isolate that and go into specifics.
Sure.
You're basically saying that, you know, we can live without a government. Is governments are bad. We can do better.
I'm saying we could one day. Yes.
I'm saying we already do. I'm saying there already isn't such thing as government.
Right.
The legit, And we're hallucinating legitimacy where there is none.
And I'm saying that one day people would be able to live without that hallucination as a part of their lives at all. So I tend to agree with Larkin. Makes a very convincing case in the book that, yes, objectively, this is not something that actually exists. Right. But the illusion is very, very important to people. And when you try to use facts and moral arguments to shatter it, oh, it doesn't go well. So I'm saying one day I believe that people will move beyond this myth the same way, by and large, human civilization has moved beyond other myths, the same way, by and large, people, as they get older and more mature, let go of myths that they are talked about, that they are taught about when they are younger.
Like Santa Claus.
Santa Claus, the exactly. Easter Bunny. For me, it went Tooth Fairy, Easter Bunny, Santa Claus, God, government.
Well, just briefly say something about my background. I was kind of ahead of the mark. I had my realization at the age 12, but no one around me could, you know, basically see what I saw. And I basically had to deal with everything on my own. And, you know, that was kind of an isolating, you know, force upon me. But the contradiction that I see basically with your argument is, how can you have a collaboration of even a moderately sized group without some sort of organization?
I'm not at all anti-organization. I'm saying, well, no human being has an exemption from morality. And if you use the example of the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8 is a list of exemptions from morality. They're allowed to steal. Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes. Even if it's in a limited way, what that was obviously doing is saying, these people over here have the right to do something that none of the rest of you have the right to do. They have the right to steal.
Well, let me dispel another common myth.
Well, let's deal with that. Let's deal with that part first. Let's deal with that. And let's remember, that this was not even the fantasy of the public granting them this privilege did not exist. They did this in secret. They would not let reporters in to cover what they were doing. This was very much a cabal that produced this document. So go ahead.
I understand that, but as far as the actions of the Constitution, it was never designed or implemented with the intention of actually being able to touch the individuals. And in fact, if you look at the Constitution, it directs most of its power towards the actual federal government. And then anywhere that it has any interactions is always supposed to be with the state. It is never, the U.S. Constitution is never to have any direct action towards any individual anywhere.
Well, I've heard that before, and we can guess about intentions, but look what the words actually say. Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes. And then it goes on with the restrictions. Now, just look at the first part of the phrasing, Congress shall have the power to. Obviously, if what came in the rest of the sentence is something we all have the power to do, they wouldn't have written it down. Like, they wouldn't write down, Congress shall have the power to tie their own shoes. You don't need to write that down. You don't have to call that a power. The only thing you need to write down is permission to do something that's bad if anyone else does it.
No, that's a mischaracterization. I mean, basically, what the Constitution said is the government shall be able to do nothing except these things.
Yeah, crushing insurrection, and declaring war.
I understand you like to put negative connotations on everything, but basically, to put it in Brett's terms, basically, the function of the Constitution is to give the magic soap to the people, so that when the government gets out of line, they are then justified in removing it. That is the real power of the Constitution. It's not.
It utterly failed.
No, but that's not the argument. The magic soap, or the magic costume, as it's called, is what the people in government have. right?
Yeah, it doesn't say the people shall have the power to lay and collect taxes. It says Congress.
The people don't get the magic soap or the magic costume. That's rulers.
Go ahead, Larkin. If you say it's a negative connotation, I want to hear your positive connotation on telling somebody that they're allowed to demand money from somebody else and hurt them if they don't pay up. What's the positive way to describe that?
Well, to put it in context, I mean, what I was trying to say is that the federal government only has power to tax the states.
Who says?
And then, well, that's exactly what it was intended to do.
How do you know that?
By research.
Research what? That's not what the words say. It's not what the Federalist Papers say.
You know what?
Federalist.
Here's what we're going to have to do. Jason, I've got more stuff that I need to do in this show, and I want to keep the phone open for other callers. It's lit up a few times. We're going to be on after midnight. Larkin might not stick with us. I can talk to him about that in a few minutes. But if you want to call us back and keep this conversation going, you can. For now, I'm going to have to let you go to open the phone back up. We're going to take a quick break. This is School Sucks Live. Hey, I was enjoying that, but I do want to make sure that we don't get caught. I hate getting caught in these conversations about the Constitution.
Yeah, I know. You just never get away.
I certainly appreciate the call and the questions and the criticism. We usually stay on after we're off.
Yeah, I'd like to do that if you wanted to. Yeah,
you want to for like another half hour, 45 minutes, yeah. Maybe. All right. Yeah. What time zone are you in?
Eastern. So it's like 11:30 now.
Okay, that's what it is here.
But I'm a vampire anyway, so I don't care.
All right. So, phone's open if anyone else wants to call in. But when we get back, I want to talk about how people want to be good. So this goes more to, I think it was like page 75, 76. There's a section called Noble Motives, Evil Actions, and it talks about the Nazis. Right. And how government seems to understand that people are good enough that they need to find moral justifications for their aggression.
Right.
And I think the Constitution is a fine example of that. So maybe we can build off that when we get back. And if somebody does call in and we're at a stopping point, I'll take their call.
Okay.
But all right, we'll be back in a minute.
Yep.
And this is round two of that conversation. This was from the after show.
We will take one more call on this show for the rest of time about the Constitution, and it can be Jason from Wisconsin if he has any more points that he wants to make.
But this weird thing about the Constitution is this thing that is supposed to limit the powers of the federal government is also the same thing that gives them their legitimacy in people's eyes. So it doesn't make any sense at all. Yeah. Like, the Constitution is there to protect us, but like, well, what
from the thing that it created? Right. It makes a big monster, but then it tells the big monster not to stomp on you.
Right.
Well, that's kind of a weird schizophrenic plan.
Yeah.
The thing I wanted to respond to him, and then we had to move on to other stuff, is, and I sort of started with it, you know, just look at what the document was when it says, okay, there's going to be a Congress and it's going to have the power to do certain things. You know, already, you know, whatever comes next, you totally botched it up. It's already illegitimate. Like I said, if you're just saying these people over here have the right to do what everybody else has the right to do, you don't need to write that down.
Right.
You only need to write it down if you're pretending to give them power. As soon as you said Congress shall have the power to, the question is, well, who says? Where'd they get it? Right. You're obviously making up powers. You're pretending to bestow upon them superhuman powers. And from then on, it was inevitable that it would turn into complete disaster. And comparing that to an Indian chief, they don't say, well, he's not a human anymore. He's allowed to boss us around and beat us up and sleep with whoever he wants. And they didn't do that. They said, he's a really smart guy. We ought to listen to him. But they still just viewed him as a guy. The Constitution did not say Congress is just a bunch of guys and maybe we should let them organize some stuff. Yeah. It pretended to give them powers. It was fundamentally an authoritarian ruling class they were creating. Okay. Doesn't work.
I just got to bring Jason into the conversation and then we can keep
good.
Going.
He's back.
Yeah, hold on 1 second. All right, Jason, what additional thoughts did you have?
Well, you know, we kind of left off, at least the way I felt about it, was we kind of left off in the middle of a thought.
Okay.
And I kind of understand what you guys are saying. I guess what I'm also trying to say is, you don't really seem, and I know exactly what you're going to say, but you don't really seem to have any solutions. And I guess your only response to that is the solution is just everybody becomes educated.
Solutions to what?
The problem of societal management. I mean, how do you?
What part of societal management?
How do you try to mitigate people from trying to kill each other? I mean, how do you? Okay, let's say, you know, we have this primitive society. We've just started getting into trade and commerce.
We don't have a primitive society. I'm sorry, but like I hate to interrupt you, and we don't have a primitive society. It's the 21st century. We are standing on the shoulders of 5,000 years of societal evolution. So I will even acknowledge that the superstition of the type of government that existed in the United States might have been a beneficial step forward away from like the Middle Ages or the feudal system, even though morally and logically, when you really break it down to its core, it's not that much different. But giving people this myth of democracy, this myth of a government that protects their freedom.
See, that's a red herring. We don't have a democracy.
That's why I called it a myth. And so it's not a red herring. A red herring would be if I derailed the conversation into a completely different direction. But I'm saying that it is a myth. We don't have that. There's an illusion of this that people buy into. And I really want to start using Larkin's language more, because I always say the government, and never the superstition of government or the myth of government. And I think that's really important. I will acknowledge that what we have come from has been maybe a positive evolution towards what we where we as human beings ultimately need to go, generally speaking. And of course, that's a little bit different from everybody, and it's only a few principles that go into place that need to make that happen. But we don't live in a primitive society, so we don't need to do the what ifs of a primitive society, because we don't live in one.
Okay, let's do a what if of our society. Okay. We have, you know, internet commerce. We have stores. We have industry. We have all of these things. And so if I decide that I'm going to go into your house and I'm going to take your stuff,
okay,
without any type of government, how do you mitigate that? How do you prevent
shoot you in the face?
Yeah, there's
number one, you'd meet my Mossberg 12 gauge.
Well, I'm wearing bulletproof body armor.
All right,
so
all right.
You shoot me and I shoot
okay,
you.
I
now
understand
you're
the
dead.
Scenario. Larkin, roll a
D20. Off track.
Larkin, go ahead first.
Please let me say this.
What you're actually asking, and I'm going to put this literally, and you're going to say that's not what I'm asking, and then I'm going to back up and prove that it is. What you're asking is, if no one in the world has an exemption from human morality, how are we going to deal with murderers? Because that's
exactly
what government is.
If you don't have somebody in a place of power, how do you have some sort of decision?
You weren't supposed to agree with it yet. Did you actually hear what I said?
Yes, I did. What you're saying is so that you, somebody wait. Took power into their hands to resolve the situation.
No,
a judge does that.
Jason, stop.
No.
That's not what he said. No. So let him say
Ready?
It again.
Let me say again what I said, and listen carefully, because you're supposed to disagree with this.
I'm not going to.
Your question amounts to saying, what do we do about murderers if no one in the world has an exemption from morality? That is what you're
saying. No, I'm not going to disagree with that, because the only way you can handle a murderer is by murdering him.
It's not murder.
And that's not moral. I mean, you're not supposed to kill somebody. So if somebody comes
disagree.
At you in a position
strongly
of
disagree,
immorality.
I'm not against the use of defensive force. That's not what government is. I'm against
I agree with what our government. with what our government currently consists of, it's not what it is. In fact, usually the murderer, you know, would be able to sue you because while he was trying to murder you, he cut his hand on your window or something.
You're not. You're not hearing what I'm saying.
We're kind of getting into what is actually red herring territory now. So I just want to let everybody who's involved in this conversation know, that's the people in the room with me and the people on the phone. When people can't see each other, like Corey, JJ, and I are the only three who can see each other, so it's very difficult. Like, you know, so if somebody's, you know, Jason, if Larkin's talking, just try to be patient and let him finish, because it gets really, really chaotic when no one can see each other and, you know, we're on the phone with each other. So Larkin, my friend, okay. One more time, go ahead.
Let's try this again. First, very simple question. We'll do it in little steps. Do you believe it's moral to use force to defend yourself against an attacker?
No, not really, but I don't see any other way but passes them, and I wouldn't subscribe to that either. So wait. If you come in my house with the intent of hurting me, I'm going to hurt you first, or at least try to.
Well, I think that would be perfectly moral. I thought you were going to say you thought that too, but so you think it's bad to defend yourself?
Yeah, I mean, you end up hurting somebody. I mean, and that is bad. I mean, even if even if you can somehow, you know, justify it, it's still, you know, bad. I mean, if you take it from a commerce point of view or economics point of view, I mean, that person might be, say, 24, and the amount of resources put into that individual.
I'm sorry. Wow. I feel like this sounds like I'm interrupting, but... You were the one who said red herring first, Jason. I just want to point that out. You said red herring first. But Larkin asked you, do you think it's moral to defend yourself? And less than 1 minute later, we're talking about the potential productive output of a 24-year-old over his life. So, like,
no,
I'm used to this.
I'm talking about the amount of resources that person has consumed that no one else could have ever consumed because they were consumed already. So when you kill that person, you have effectively nullified all those resources, and that is a tragedy.
Yeah,
so it is immoral.
However, if you had not killed that person, they would have killed you, and then your resource. I'm not even sure.
Yeah, well, actually. Let's move. Let's accept your answer. I have a hard time believing that you mean it, but let's accept your answer that you believe that it is immoral for you to forcibly defend yourself and against an attacker. If you believe that, how do you think that people in government acquire the moral right to do what you just said is wrong?
I basically believe that there's no other way. I mean, you have to have some sort of mitigation of violence. And that's not what we have today. We actually have the exemplification of violence. But you have to have some way of mitigating a dispute.
Well, why can't disputes be mitigated on a case-by-case basis instead of with a blanket ruling that covers a couple hundred million people at once? Okay.
And I also
so why do
that's
we need government
why the
for
court
that?
is a forum. The reason why the court is a forum is because its intent was to be an open debate, a never-ending debate on a case-by-case basis. But they've subverted all that.
Yeah. Did you hear when I read the moral philosophy of Nazism? Did you hear that quote? So intents,
I did.
Intents don't count for much, right? Like because that's not how it played out. So like we can talk about intents all night, and we can do justifications for this kind of violence all night. But to me, you know, when you say something like we're talking about the idea of aggression, the idea that taxation is theft, that what the government does is murder. There is no way to justify that. And as long as people keep trying to escape having the moral argument and moving the conversation into some other sphere, then yes, of course, this continue. That's just obfuscation, And the problems of today will continue to, well, first of all, continue, but they'll also get worse, I think.
Larkin has a solution.
That's why I'm trying to pin this down to authority. Really is the belief that certain people have exemption from morality. And you're basically saying you don't have the right to defend yourself, but you somehow want to give that right that you don't have to the gang called government. I want to know how the hell you can give a right you don't have.
I also said that I would act in a moral fashion and defend myself.
Then let me put it this way. It's supposed to be a simple step-by-step thing, and we keep flying off on tangents. Is there anything that somebody in government has the right to do that you don't, as far as defending yourself or whatever you decide you need to do? Can a guy with a badge have an exemption from the moral rules that bind you, that apply to you?
For clarification, are we talking about what exists today, or are we talking about, like, just constitutionally?
No, I mean, in principle, is there anything that a person with a badge has the moral right to do? I'm not asking about legal anything. Does he have the moral right to do anything that you don't personally have the right to do?
I don't think so, no.
Good, neither do I. That rules out all government. Because if you can't tax and you can't legislate and you can't regulate and you can't declare war.
Okay, I think I can kind of focus this argument a little bit. How do you have a moral society with individuals that act immorally?
You defend yourself against them. How do you have a society in which you justify immorality by calling it government, which is what every government is?
I think I agree with your answer to a certain degree, but basically what you end up with is competing mobs.
No, and, absolutely not. That's what you end up with when people imagine authority in government to be legitimate, because then they imagine that when government steals and bosses people around, it's moral.
I'm not talking about government at all. I'm just talking about, you know, me and my family have been transgressed on by another family, and then you have maybe an intergenerational feud. And that has happened in history.
There's not a magic thing that makes that never happen. I'm saying that is statistically completely dwarfed by the amount of violence done in the
I would agree. I would agree with that too. I run under the assumption that generally people are good, even though my experiences have been that a lot of them that will try to take advantage of you and rip you off.
Yeah, but here's why I asked the original question. There are bad people, and the good people have to figure out how to deal with them. When people say, "But without government, how would you?" What that literally means is, if we don't give some people an exemption from right and wrong, how are we going to deal with this thing over here? Whether it's taking care of the poor or protecting ourselves, it never, ever, ever, ever helps to take a gang and say, "You are not bound by morality. There, protect us."
I would agree with that. I mean,
it's horribly destructive, and that's what government always is.
And I would say that if you were to use history, you know, to either prove one side of this argument or another, I would say that you're right. That eventually, when you give this power, you always end up with what we have today. I would agree with that.
Yeah, and it's not even bad luck. It's just, it's what's to be expected. You know, suppose you tell your neighbors, you have one nasty neighbor over there who's mean to your family, and you know, you have this feud going on. So you turn around to your other neighbor and say, "I am proclaiming that you are not bound by morality anymore. You can do whatever you want and it's okay. Now are you going to help me out?" Whether he helps you out or not, society is going to get worse, because you just gave somebody permission to be evil.
You don't necessarily even have to do that. He might look at the situation and make a moral decision, decide on one side or the other.
Yeah, but that's
not
government.
In which case,
that's not government. Government is telling him he has rights that nobody else has. For him to act on his own could be perfectly valid.
I guess I'm starting to understand your argument, that basically you're telling these people that they have a carte blanche permission to act immoral. But that's...
Yeah. Telling a gang they're allowed to be evil doesn't solve anything. It makes a really big problem on top of the problem humanity already had.
I don't know that And you said that intents don't matter, but I don't know that that was ever the intent. And I think intents do matter. Like, if I'm driving to work and my intent is to get to work safely and I accidentally hit another person's vehicle and kill them, that wasn't my intent. I think that that should be, considered.
Well, maybe, but the means matter. The whatever the founders supposedly intended, what they claimed to do, and they put it in writing, they claim to give certain people an exemption from morality,
right,
and tell them they're allowed to steal, they're allowed to declare war, they're allowed to violently suppress insurrection if the people say, we don't want to do this anymore. That is pretending to give them an exemption from morality.
Like,
but what my argument was, at the same time, they sought to empower the people to continuously monitor them and remove them.
Where did
if they
the
ever went
have the power to do anything? In
I don't
the
see any reason to be convinced that that was their intent, was to empower the people. There's no reason to be convinced.
I believe in the Declaration of Independence, it says that as soon as a government subverts its purpose, it is the power of the people to overthrow it.
Declaration said that. Constitution directly contradicted it and say, when the people rise up, you have the power to crush insurrections.
Which happened before the Constitution was 10 years old.
Rebellion,
Whiskey Rebellion. That's George Washington, the father of this country.
I understand that. And really what should have happened in that situation is his own words should have been played against him, and he should have been removed from his position. But that's not what happened, and that's not what ever happened because of what you're talking about, how people instinctively accept and support authority.
I don't think it's instinctive at all, necessarily. A lot of work goes into training us to accept authority. A lot of work.
Okay, I can accept that. I can accept that that's part of a training program. But like, if you just even consider like a very basic situation of just, a child and his parents, I think that there's a natural inclination there to listen to and accept what the parents tell you.
Yeah, but I think the relationship
of not to do that.
a relationship between a child and a parent is not really the ideal parallel to draw to our relationship with the state.
Yeah, but what I was trying to do is show that it is in fact in human nature to accept directives from outside sources.
Well, it's
to
learned.
Be followers. I mean, there is some degree of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what happens
I don't
is
think
that
it,
kind
if you've
of
ever
evolves.
Dealt with a 2-year-old, I don't think that behavior is instinctive at all. It has to be trained into you at great effort.
I will say that there is also an innate, maybe even more powerful human nature to resist that. I mean, I don't have any kids myself, but my brother has a 2- and a 4-year-old, and to say that they listen carte blanche on everything would just be a complete lie.
Right.
In fact, I would say that they don't listen more than they do. But when it comes to knowledge, like, what is this and how do I speak, that kind of stuff is just innately absorbed. And there's really no mechanism to resist that.
Well, young children, real quick, just let me insert this. Young children also have a very powerful weapon against bullshit, and it's called why. And it's something that as we get older, we learn to stop asking.
Right.
Because in so many situations that we are forced into, the question is unacceptable. It is an okay to ask why this situation is occurring. So a lot of the discussions that I have with people, I might have goals for that conversation. I don't think that like people don't engage in heated debates or even mild political conversations like willy-nilly. Like, there's something that they want to get out of it, but I'm participating in it through a lot of why questions, and they tend to make people very uncomfortable. So I think that speaks to what you're saying a little bit, Jason, correct me if I'm wrong, about maybe that natural resistance. It's just curiosity that most of this stuff is total bullshit, and curiosity is a weapon, or at the very least a defense against it, and that's not comfortable. Go ahead.
Curiosity is definitely a component of it, but I think as soon as you assert your will or your force, there's this innate human characteristic that says, you know, this person is trying to force me to do something, and I'm going to resist that. And curiosity does not explain that away.
Okay.
And you know, to put it in perspective, I mean, I was never indoctrinated like you were. I never drank the Kool-Aid.
What do you mean?
I don't believe that.
No, I mean, I really never did. I mean, as far back as
if you viewed the Constitution as at all legitimate, you did. It might have been a smaller dose of Kool-Aid, but if you actually believed that that document created a legitimate ruling class, even a little tiny limited one, that's the same.
I don't believe that it does create a ruling class. I believe that
what does it create?
It I don't think it creates anything. I think it's just a tool to basically justify both, you know, the government's actions, and then ultimately what I think its purpose was the people's actions to get rid of said government. And like somebody said earlier,
there's nothing in the Constitution about that, though, people getting rid of government.
Well, if you're looking for a quote somewhere,
well, it has to be written on paper.
Well, okay, how about let's take the freedom of speech, right? It says the government shall not. And why would it put that in there?
Well, let's get some facts straight here about, oh my God, I cannot believe we're still talking about the Constitution.
But, well, this is just a weird...
Can we talk about solutions, please?
There were people who were opposed in many ways to federalism who were participating in that debate, which was not public again. Very, very secretive kind of thing going on. Who said... people like Jefferson, who were so far from perfect and really like embarrassing hypocrites, you know, based on the things they said and how they behaved in their personal lives or what institutions they participated in their personal lives, like for Jefferson, slavery. And I understand, yes, it's complicated. Wait, let me just make this point. Who said that document was drafted without the Bill of Rights? And there were anti-federalists who said, we will not support this, and you need our support. This isn't like the whole ratified by states. Like, then the people, it was submitted to the people for their approval. It was voted by representatives, quote unquote, and 7 out of 13 colonies approved it. So that was a majority, I think, 7 or 8 or maybe even 9. But still, like, the idea that this was submitted to the people and they're like, yes, we love it. I still haven't made my point. Just, I know I'm kind of, I threw a lot of other stuff in there, but I'm almost there. The Bill of Rights was not part of the Constitution until some debate took place and people said, we will not even support it unless you put this in there, not giving anybody anything, but only stating, and I think you understand this part of it, what the government cannot take away from people based on pretty much, just all the lessons of government throughout all of history. So go ahead.
I concede all that. What I'm saying, though, is that, you know, good people do bad things and bad people do good things. So, you know, analyzing the person and then contrasting that towards the Constitution means nothing to me. I take it basically very much the way I want to. And the way I want to take it is the fact that the Constitution carte blanche points out how to recognize a corrupt government. The government shall not inhibit speech. If it does, then it's a bad government. The government shall not force you to testify against yourself. If it does, it's a bad government, and I think that's the effect of the Constitution.
Yeah, but what it did is, it first of all, it pretended to create this government. It's just like if I wrote a document that says your neighbor is allowed to take your car whenever he wants, and he's allowed to cage you if you don't mow your lawn every 3 days, but your neighbor is not allowed to punch you in the face, he's not allowed to steal your income, he's not allowed to do a bunch of things. There, is that okay? No, it isn't.
No.
Because
of course,
regardless of the list of the things they're not supposed to do, It started with a list of here are some superhuman rights that human beings don't have.
And I understand that. I think the reason that those superhuman rights exist is the same reason that you can't really come up with something that would work more efficiently.
They don't exist, though. So, and what happened? What we have now is very. It is awesome for a very, very small group of people. It's finely tuned. It's well oiled, but it has nothing to do with justice for people. So if you're talking about efficient from a subjective point of view, like your point of view, it's not efficient to you, but or to any peaceful person, because it allows for the existence or the imagined existence of this institution. And Jason,
see, you're
final
contradicting
thoughts. Go ahead.
Yourself.
No, where?
I think you're contradicting
you
yourself.
You agreed with everything, you're saying, Jason. You've conceded
you're
all
you're saying
points.
That this okay. somehow gives power, but then in your other argument, you say that the power really resides with the people. If we were just to decide...
I don't remember any of us saying anything like that.
You said
Did
that
we?
With the income taxes. You said that if...
No, it creates the we're talking about illusions. We're not talking about anything in objective reality. That has been pretty much the whole point.
Everything's subjective to him anyway.
But of what we've been doing for the last 3 hours.
It pretends to give them the right to tax. It gives them no such right. Nothing can give them such a right.
But if nobody paid the taxes, you said so yourself, that they would have no power to actually collect them.
Right.
Yeah, the belief
so
authority,
The power is really with the people, and that's what you were saying then. And what I'm saying now is that's really what the Constitution does, is it shows you basically a framework of what the government should be
right.
residing
okay,
within.
That's fantastic.
If
even if that were true, that's fantastic. But, for example, you keep going back to the First Amendment, Congress shall make no laws regarding the limiting of speech. All right. How does that help you when they do it anyway?
Well, they
it says
do it
in their
the
own
time.
Rule book that they can't do it. So how does that rule book existing help you when they do it anyway?
And I'm at the same place as far as that goes. I spent my entire life trying to explain these things to people, and I run up to the same problems that you do where, you know, a logical argument doesn't work because if somebody doesn't want to be logical, they don't have to be.
That's, and I think we're all in agreement there, Jason. I'm going to let you go for tonight so we can open this up to some other callers, but thank you very much for participating in the show. We appreciate it.